values, and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, we are rapidly approaching our weekend. Hope you've got a great one planned, a good final hour of the show. We had Kristen Bentz on the show today. Kristen is a frequent guest. She is the founder and CEO of KB Advisory Group, a retail analyst by trade. And I love talking the economy with someone that does what she does. She observes the retail world. She talks about a bifurcated economy. She talks about the wealthy and how they're doing and how the working class is doing. And she puts it together and tells the story based on how people are behaving. So a couple of key things. We'll get to some of the clips from her. We're going to start with Dollar General. And it is talking in this bifurcated economy. It's the working class people. And she talks about trading down as your belt needs to tighten, going from Target to Walmart, from Walmart to the dollar stores. Well, the dollar store, Dollar General, had a double miss in their projections. They missed in revenue. They missed in profit. They had a double miss. And their CEO, and this is what she's talking about, the CEO and what the reason, this was her biggest concern.
Dollar General came out with their numbers yesterday. They had a double miss on earnings and on revenues, which is a big red flag. So when dollar stores start tanking, that's not a good sign. The biggest red flag to me is their CEO attributed the loss in consumers to consumers trading down to food banks.
Now, I think that this is something that we all talk about. I talk about intentional giving and how we prop up our society. And I mean that in a positive way, how we lift each other up, I should say. And I think it's a good thing. We're doing the Food Bank Fridays along with Gatos and Chad right now to help St. Mary's food banks because of this reason right here. Matter of fact, I'll give you the pitch right now. If you can donate, $1 buys 5 meals. Now, a year or so ago before inflation, you could get 7 meals for a dollar. But 5 meals for a dollar is still a great opportunity. If you can give, text the word food to 411-923. Donations, big or small. It's intentional giving. Help out Food Bank Fridays. It's brought to you by the UPS stores and Gatos and Chad. It's a great program. And we are doing it just for these reasons. Working families, families that have jobs and homes that are finding it difficult to make ends meet between paydays. And the one area that gives many times are meals. Got to have gas to get to work. Got to pay the rent. Got to pay for the lights. You got to make sure the electricity and the AC is on in the summertime. All of these things are life and death. So what ends up happening is they're looking for food boxes. And that's part of what's happening here. That's part of this economy. The other part in this and in this economy is that things are going well for wealthier people. But there isn't, I want everyone to understand, I defend the wealthy quite often because I've learned so much from wealthy people and how much alike we all are. I've had the privilege throughout my life to work for and work with people that were very wealthy. Volunteer organizations, and they work just as hard as I did. And the reason why I defend them is because I think that we're all in this together. And when you say, well, yeah, but they're doing just fine, but they are also the ones that are the job creators and they're being attacked on the other end. But in the end, it is people of means that are going to make sure that we drag people, we bring them and lift them up. That is what makes us best. That's just as cheesy as that sounds, as cliche as that sounds, I don't think I'm entitled to anything. I don't think anybody owes me anything. But I have been the beneficiary of people's kindness. I have had people help me in times when I was in great need, in my childhood especially. And I'll never forget that. And I want to spend as much time as I can with the rest of my life being the other side of that and giving everywhere I can. But when it comes to the economy, the wage numbers are down. I want you to hear about this because as we're watching people trade Dollar General for food banks, part of it is about wages. And I asked her about wages.
Wages are down. So people look at this and think, oh my gosh, this is an amazing blowout number, robust labor market. But most of the jobs, if you really look at the composite of hiring, those are folks that need to work for health insurance. and that sort of thing, and benefits after all the COVID benefits ended. So they're fleeing back into the workforce, but they're not exactly looking for these very high paying jobs. They're just working to like basically survive.
And that's the other part of this is older people going back into the workforce. What does that do? And we're talking about older people or inflation. These are retired people that are finding out that what they are living on in their retirement is not paying for their needs because of what's happening. So they're taking work in order to bridge that gap until inflation goes down and other things happen. So it, a lot of this, I just think this is such an important conversation because we hear job numbers. It becomes political. You're going to hear people on my side of the aisle say it's still in a horrible place. The White House put out a statement today talking about the labor, the job numbers and how the Biden economic plan is working. And in the end, I look at other things. I talk to people like Kristen Bentz because she will tell you this is how people are behaving. Working class families are trading down and they've been trading down for a while, trading down from Target to Walmart. We're talking about expense here. I'm not denigrating or ranking businesses. I'm talking about prices. And then they're trading down from Walmart to Dollar General. And now the CEO said they missed their numbers because they believe people are trading down from Dollar General to food boxes and food banks. So I think the double lesson in this is that inflation still remains very, very high. Wages are softening, which is a terrible thing for people to hear that are just trying to keep their heads above water when the wages they were making before were the only thing that kept their heads above water. Now the wages are even going down. That's terrible news for those very people. But the other part of this is our opportunity for the rest of us that are in a position where $10 to you is not a deal breaker, but $10 to St. Mary's Food Bank or United Food Bank or whoever, but $10 in a donation can go a long way for entire families. It's going to take that effort of intentional giving from a lot of us. I think that that's the way out. The waiting for the government to bail us out and fix this problem. Look where we are. And this isn't Republican, Democrat. It's a governmental issue. We are going to solve this problem. When we are in higher demand, wages are going up. We are seeing a shift right now where employers are understanding that the jobs are drying up. They no longer have to make major concessions on hours and working from home. They no longer have to pay large wages and huge bonuses in certain sectors. And there are some that still do, but in other sectors, they're seeing they don't have to do that anymore. We had to get very creative in the construction world. In the last time we saw a construction boom in the early 2000s, and it was because we were building so much so fast that we had a hard time keeping qualified help. You could get, you know, whoever, if you were an electrician, that's the world I came from, you could at lunchtime leave a job site, walk across the street to another job site, get a $1 an hour raise in pay, and go to work in the afternoon for another company. That was available. And contractors like myself were getting creative with signing bonuses and attendance bonuses. If you come on board and you work for 90 days and you don't ever take a day off and you're here for that, you're going to get a cash bonus. And then they dry up when the labor market softens a little bit. And we're seeing that softening. How is this going to affect all of us, especially when we've got school close season right around the corner? What's going to happen there as parents have to get clothes on their kids' back? Kids continue to grow. It's not, for me, it's not desperate, but it is concerning. Coming up in a moment, we do a segment at 11:20 every day. If you're new to the show, it catches you up on the big news stories of the day. If you want to stick around for it, it's called Did You Hear This? We'll do it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, let's wrap up this busy news week. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
Can't hear you.
There we go. Sorry,
there you are.
Technical difficulties. The button was not working with me today.
Okay, good. I'm glad it wasn't me.
Well, you're lucky you then. So last night, the U.S. Senate passed the Fiscal Responsibility Act, and it's heading to the President Biden's desk. Congressman Wances Kamani explained why he voted yes on the debt ceiling deal.
There are no new taxes, no new government programs, and the obvious win here is that we didn't do a clean lift of the debt ceiling. The last nine times the debt ceiling has been raised, had been just clean under Republican and Democrat
What other changes can we expect in the appropriations process?
The appropriations process, I think they're going to wrestle with defense spending and how that increased in this. Now, I think it's 4%, but there's some discretion on where you can spend some of the other money. I think that argument is going to be give and take in those in that committee, in the House especially, with how that money is going to be spent. And you're going to have to give to some of the Democrats to get support. There's going to be a lot of Republicans that aren't supportive, and it isn't a very big majority. So I do think the negotiations will continue when they get to that portion of it.
CEO of KB Advisory Group, Kristen Bentz, joined the show and explained why payroll soared but unemployment rate rose.
Most of the jobs, if you really look at the composite of hiring, those are folks that need to work for health insurance. So they're fleeing back into the workforce, but they're not exactly looking for these very high-paying jobs. They're just working to, like, basically survive.
How long will this trend last?
I think it's a national trend. It's been going on for a while. We know that healthcare costs are very expensive, and if you can get a job with a company that offers health insurance, that is a benefit that keeps people in jobs for a long time. When you see some of the other expenses that people are having in other areas, healthcare is a big, I think this is going to continue for a while, because healthcare is just so expensive and insurance is impossible for the individual. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the headlines.
A new report predicts that Phoenix will deal with severe groundwater shortages. And yesterday, Governor Katie Hobbs announced that the state will not approve new housing construction in the suburbs of Metro Phoenix.
If we do nothing, we could face a 4% shortfall in groundwater supplies over the next 100 years. We have to close this gap and find efficiencies for our water use, manage our aquifers wisely, and increase our utilization of renewable supplies.
Is pausing construction necessary while we look for solutions on dealing with groundwater supply?
To be very honest with you, I do not have a definitive answer for that. I don't know if this is a knee-jerk reaction to that report. We've heard other people say we got a reprieve last year and we're working in the right direction. That's another question, is how quickly are we going to get these alternatives up and running, whether it's desalination or further treatment of wastewater to make it turn it into drinking water and not just the water for watering lawns and for watering golf courses. A lot of those questions have to be asked, because she's talking about a 4% drop in 100 years. Is that enough to dry up those places that we are now having construction in? And is this a waste of time, or is it good to do it now so we don't have to be more strict later? And I don't have the answers yet.
The Phoenix Suns have hired Frank Vogel to be their next head coach.
Vogel was most recently in charge of the Los Angeles Lakers. He led them to an NBA title in the bubble back in 2020. He'll reportedly get a five-year deal worth $31 million with the Suns. Vogel will replace Monty Williams in Phoenix.
Is Frank Vogel the coach to take Kevin Durant and Devin Booker to the promised land?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know this. If you look at what he has accomplished, he has been able to work with superstars. He did it with LeBron James, and so he can do it with KD. He is a guy that puts together very crazy and unique defenses. He's going to be in a very competitive Western Conference. But you've got superstars like KD. You've got superstars like Devin Booker. Now the question is, what do they do with Ayton? Do they keep him around? Does he try to turn him into the big man that everybody thought he could be? If he possesses that skill where he can pull that out of Ayton, then yes, he's going to get these guys to an NBA Finals and probably a championship. Or if they don't believe they can, is he the guy to help get the people in here to fill those voids? There's a lot of questions, but it's hard to argue with a guy that's been a world champion. Everybody misses Monty. I think he's a phenomenal coach, but this is a guy that's won it all. And if that's what you need to get you over the top, the Suns are going to love this guy. Great job, Julia. Once we got your mic working in there, that was a good job this week. As always, we'll do it again starting Monday morning at 11:20. What we're going to do coming up in a moment is talk more about specifically about this debt ceiling. An interesting conversation that I didn't preview with Juan Ciscomani, the congressman from Southern Arizona. We did talk about why other Republicans in the Arizona delegation voted no. We talked about those conversations and why somebody would vote no, what were the things they needed. But his reasons why he voted yes, I thought, were very reasonable, because they're the same things that I've been saying for the last few days. But I want to be fair. There are a lot of people that I agree with on so many different things, and I admire for their political stances on things, that voted no and were adamant no's. What Lindsey Graham had to say about defense spending resonated with me in a huge way. So it's not as if anybody is happy that said yes to this. The question was, were you going to be able to get anything more or anything better from a Republican perspective? The Democrats had asked themselves the same thing. Is this going to be forgotten, or is this going to be a sticking point moving into 2024? We'll have that discussion next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to be as nice as I can. Happy Friday. Now I'm changing directions completely. Thank you to Julia, who is always on top of breaking news. There is a press release, and I'm going to tell you who it's from first, and then we're going to dive into it. The organizations who are part of it's a campaign, and it's called the School to Liberation Campaign. Sounds pretty ominous. And here are the groups that are a part of this: Poder in Action, Puente, some Phoenix Union board members, and some staff members. I'm going to take you back. When we talked about the school safety plan in the Phoenix Union High School District, there were a lot of people that said it was a student-led charge that got school resource officers out of schools. And I told you I had changed my opinion on that, that I believed it was because of the political leanings of board members that were connected to Poder in Action. Now, I understand for those of you that are Spanish speakers, I am not. So I think it's more of an insult if I try to pronounce something properly than to just do it in the whitest way I can. And I can't pronounce how Poder is supposed to be, but you know the organization I'm talking about. The press release reads as this: the district's votes on a safety plan that is community-led and solutions-oriented. I looked and looked and looked. It doesn't say anything about school resource officers. Nothing about school resource officers. But here's what it does say: wins for the district. A student-led, student-centered process to create a student bill of rights. Stop laughing. A commitment to focus on collecting data and building safety solutions based on data. What the hell does that mean? What does that mean? They're going to collect data and then come up with solutions based on the data? They don't already have the data. They have the data. They know how many times they have to call the police. They know how many times they're finding guns and knives. They know how often they're finding drugs. They know who those people are. But now they're going to start collecting data. A confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from the police. Let me read that again. A confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from police. Let's let it sink in. Infrastructure repairs that have been neglected by the district. An expulsion pilot program. I thought, oh, good, they're going to start expelling some of the bad kids. Mm-mm. Designed to keep kids out of the school to prison pipeline, which means the bad kids are going to get extra attention and not be thrown out of school. The board also made an effort to continue the conversation about scaling police presence down to zero. I almost don't know where to go with this. So all of you that live in Phoenix, you don't have to have kids in the district. If you live within the confines of the Phoenix Union High School District or the Phoenix District, you have a say. You're a voter. You're a taxpayer. These are your schools. These are the schools that are supposed to enrich the lives of our children, educate them, and prepare them for the next phase of their lives. They have a program to keep information from the police. They say it right here. A confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from the police. I've mentioned a couple of things to you over the last few weeks that I have information on, that I can document, that I have the proof of it. Because I don't want to come on the air and just spout off things that I don't know are true. I'm not a journalist, but I still work with a place that is filled with journalists, and I don't want to compromise the integrity of the name on this radio station, and I would never do that. Couple of different occasions, administrators found guns on students, wouldn't tell the cops who the students were. There have been times where drugs have been found, at least 2 bags of fentanyl. Don't tell the cops where it came from. So they have got a system that's going to be in-house that doesn't tell the police. An expulsion program, keeping kids out of the pipeline, the prison to from school to prison pipeline. But it is the bottom one. This is a kick in the face to everybody out there that thinks police are the problem. This is insane. The board also made an effort to continue the conversation about scaling police presence down to zero, not scaling it up. I want you to think of another dangerous situation in your life. Name one. Name one dangerous situation in your life that has ever been made safer by saying we are going to get the cops the hell out of here. Name one. Super Bowl experience. All of us, we were down there. We did our show for 2 days from the NFL experience at the convention center. Cops everywhere that you could see and that you couldn't see. Name a situation. Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House, in the wake of what happened on January 6th, what did she do? She put up a wall and she called in the National Guard. Anytime you have a neighborhood, you can talk to any police agency you want here in Arizona or anywhere in the country. One of the things they do when they deal with statistics, and I will tell you how Phoenix does it, or at least how I knew they did it in the past, and I'm sure they still do, is they have intelligence gathering people. They gather crime statistics. And there are teams of cops called NET squads, neighborhood enforcement teams. The NET squads are an anti-crime unit. And they will look at an area, and the command staff says, we are seeing a huge amount of catalytic converter thefts in this area. Home burglaries, auto burglaries, car thefts, drug sales. Prostitution has really spiked in this part of town. And then what they do is they adjust and send more cops to that high crime area that specialize in getting rid of those criminals. Never in the history of Phoenix have they said, we have seen an uptick in crime in this neighborhood. I think the best thing for us to do is pull out and go somewhere else, and that neighborhood's going to get better. It's never happened. So when I've said in the past that there are board members that are making these decisions that are of a political ideology that is so anti-cop that it doesn't matter how much crime is going on inside the schools, that they believe the cops are the problem, this is living proof. This is absolute living proof in this press release. The Phoenix Union District votes on a safety plan that is community-led and solutions-oriented. So when they tell you that there are students that are afraid of the police and that's why they made these decisions, I can tell you, and you can take their word for it, or you can take my word for it, or don't take anybody's word for it, but I'm going to tell you the other side of this coin. The other side of this coin is teachers are afraid, and so are students. And students are telling their teachers, we're afraid. We don't want to go into the bathrooms between classes because of what's going on in there. We get a hall pass, or we go home, or we hold it. We're not going into that environment. So the good kids that really do need and want an education are fighting for their lives because the bad kids are on campus. There are multiple pictures and videos out there. Kids with guns in school. Kids with guns in school. Is that not right there reason enough to have a police presence so kids know if you bring a gun on campus, you're going to prison? This plan right here, I'm going to read it again. A confidential complaint process to protect students, staff, and educators from police. So I'm making an inference here, and if I'm wrong, I will apologize on Monday when we get clarification. But that sounds to me that if there's a kid on campus that's selling drugs and they find drugs on him or her, or if they find a gun or a knife on campus, instead of turning those people into the police, the new plan is to handle it in-house and keep those kids from police custody. That's what it sounds like to me. That somehow they've got this very progressive, and by the way, the Phoenix Union High School District calls itself the most progressive district in America. They are so progressive that they are trying to find these solutions when their schools are in danger. This is a topic I'm going to warn you now that I am going to be on top of from now until eternity. This is a question that every parent, I don't care what political leanings you are, name a situation, and I hope you'll email me where I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I'll admit it on Monday. Name a situation where crime goes up and it's been solved by kicking the cops out. Name one in your life that you've ever been a part of or you've ever seen. This is pure insanity. Coming up in a moment, just a little bit more on my conversation with Juan Siscomani on the debt ceiling, why he voted yes, and what he thinks is going to happen next. We'll do it coming up here momentarily.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
No idea where that song came from. What are you thinking? What's going on?
Happy birthday.
Thanks. Yeah, Sunday. 56 on Sunday. Oy. Thank you. Appreciate reminding me.
All good wishes for you in the new year.
Oh, yeah. I can see by that grin on your face that you're wishing me well.
I'm a very genuine person.
Yes, you are. Thanks, Julie.
Happy birthday, Mike.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I want to remind you, you can enter win the $100 Amazon gift card. You can spoil your pets. We have got the KTAR Paw Picks thing going on right now. Submit your picks at KTAR.com/contests. Every month, they randomly draw a pet pick of your pet or someone's, and they win a $100 gift card to Amazon. So enter it. It's pretty cool. Before we close out the show, I want to go back to my conversation with Congressman Siscomani. I have to tell you, I've grown to respect him a great deal. Juan Siscomani seems to be pragmatic, and he's a very conservative guy with a compelling story. Southern Arizona, this is a guy that was a naturalized citizen, brought here as a young child. So he's gone through the immigration process. So he understands it from the inside, its failures, its advantages. So I like the his thoughts on the border. And he voted yes on the debt ceiling. And he explained it. He explained why. He talked about this divided government we have.
Whether we like it or not, that we have a Republican House, a Democrat Senate, and a Democrat president. I'm going to work hard to change that and make sure that we win the majority in the Senate and the White House back. But the reality that we have right now is this, and this is what we could agree on.
So I talked with him about these, what you can agree on, what you can't. He's on the Appropriations Committee. This is not, it isn't over. Now they got to appropriate funds. And he said the fight's not over on the debt ceiling. And I like this comment as well.
This isn't over. Whether you're happy or unhappy with the vote, this is something that we need to continue to talk, because the real battle is going to be in the appropriations process.
So the one thing, and he, you're going to hear him say this in a moment, was about military spending. From a Republican perspective, the very small increase in military spending in face of what America is facing internationally, the Chinese, we know the aggressions. We've faced the aggressions from the Russians and from the Iranians and from the constant verbal aggression from the North Koreans. We understand that there are nations out there that would love to do us harm economically and sometimes physically. We know that it exists. But China is our biggest adversary, and they're using the economy in a lot of ways to try to, you know, to defeat America. That's how we won the Cold War. We were always worried, and we should have. We were legitimately worried about a nuclear war with the Russians, with the Soviet Union. We beat the Soviet Union economically. That's why it ended without firing a shot. I don't believe that we are days away from a war, a physical war with the Chinese. But you can see the alliances. You can see the alliances. The Chinese, the Russians, the Iranians, the North Koreans, the Indians. You see that this is going on with those nations. The fact that, and I mentioned this, let me stay on military spending, then I'll get to the other point in a moment. So why would we not show the world that we are very serious about national defense? And I talked to him, and this is what he said about military spending.
Defense spending was increased, but it was increased by 3%. I wish it would have been increased by more than that, at least to be able to keep up with inflation. And that wasn't there. So that's a battle that we're going to continue to have. And that's one of the issues that is still on our list.
So we're going to talk, next time I talk with Congressman Siscomani, we're going to talk about waste and redundancy, and if in some of those in military spending, if they could get rid of those two things, they might make up for that shortfall, at least in the short term, but I think we have room for more spending. Here's the other part of this, is we continue to race toward these alternate fuels, these renewable fuels, electric cars and solar. It takes minerals out of the ground to do that, and we have relinquished the rights to those minerals largely to places like China. We know that Afghanistan, or maybe you don't, but Afghanistan is a very mineral-rich nation. We've pulled out of Afghanistan, and the Taliban has developed a rapport with China. What happens? Here we are. We've watched what's happened when we give up our energy independence when it comes to fossil fuels. We know we've saw gas prices set a record. We've seen diesel prices set a record in this country just within the last couple of years. Little we could do about it. Well, what's going to happen when we're depending on mining and then refining those products? We don't refine anything in this country anymore. And here we are now setting ourselves up for the next generation to fall into the same trap. A lot we have to talk about. Military spending is one of them. But all of these other areas, we've got to keep our finger on the pulse of the world. And I hope that we get things turned around. That's why 2024 is so, so important. Just about out of time. If you are a social media user, I'd love to stay in touch on the weekends. I am at Broomhead KTAR on Twitter. That is my personal Twitter handle. Please stay in touch. At Broomhead Show, update you on what we do on the show, our guests and otherwise, so you can know what's coming up. Please follow both of those. And if you're an Instagram user, you can always find me at Mike Broomhead. All one word, no dots, no dashes. And that's where we can connect over the weekend. I hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for spending part of your week with us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Until then, God bless.